rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Hooten, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Matthew Johnson presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For the sake of the audio record, today's date is June 26, 2019. We are in courtroom 200. This panel of the court today has six cases on its calendar, three of which will be submitted with oral argument and three of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A19-154, Quality Companies, LLC versus Corey Albertson. Appellant's counsel, you may approach and begin. Please identify yourself at the beginning.
May it please the court, my name is Matthew Bialik. I am the attorney for the appellant, Corey Lee Albertson. I'm not going to rehash the facts. I'm going to assume that you're familiar with this, but I'm happy to answer any clarifying questions you might have. I'm just going to dive right into it. So today we're here on a matter of first impression. We're interpreting a statute and a statutory scheme that has not seen judicial review. And the reason it's likely not seen judicial review is because very rarely are the dollar figures at issue enough that it would ever get to the Court of Appeals. Specifically, we're dealing with Minnesota Statutes Chapter 168B, which is dealing with the impoundment of vehicles that had been abandoned. Essentially, what we're dealing with here is an incredibly narrow issue. We're dealing with an issue of notice. Under this statutory scheme, a tow truck and operator, someone who runs an impound lot, is able to tow vehicles at the request of whatever party, bring it back, after giving notice to the owner of the vehicle, if after 45 days, the owner does not attempt to reclaim through paying all fees that have been incurred, then title to the vehicle actually passes to the impound lot operator. And at that point, they have the ability to go to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, apply for a title.
And we're aware of how the statute works, so and we have a lot to talk about, so I want to get right to the issue.
Certainly, you're
right. First of all, is this a case of statutory interpretation, or is this a case of deciding if the judge appropriately applied the statute?
This is a case of determining what exactly the statute means.
Okay, and so we're really looking at the, I think the key issue is whether it was impossible to determine with reasonable certainty the identity and address of the registered owner.
That
isn't
is correct.
That the operative clause that we're dealing with?
That's exactly correct,
Your Honor. All right, and I guess I'm just looking at the word impossible. I don't see that word in statutes very often. In fact, I can't even point to any statute where I've ever seen that word.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that mean, impossible? Is that a heightened burden, I guess, that you have to show that there's absolutely no way you can figure out who the owner is?
Well, certainly that the word impossible, denotes that there's some type of burden with it, but there seems to be an internal contradiction within the phrase between impossible and certainty. So the task here today, obviously, is to reconcile the differences, and I think that the most productive way to determine what this phrase means is to look at it in terms of what it would take to actually get title and what it means in the context, not just in a vacuum, but in this particular statutory scheme.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, because I'm just looking at this exhibit here. It's exhibit 4, and it's got the mud flaps. And it says quality companies, address, telephone number. Is there any factual dispute that number and that address was never utilized by your client?
No, Your Honor.
All right. And so why, I'm just looking at that exhibit, why wasn't that done? I mean, because it seems to be an identifying marker on that truck.
Well, certainly, Your Honor. It also very prominently displayed J.B. Hunt, and that was, I mean, to most onlookers would be the company that was actually the owner of the truck. And at that point, the appellant didn't understand exactly what that was. It didn't register because very often there are things printed on the mud flap. But I think what's really important to realize here is the fact that Quality Companies is not the registered owner.
Yes,
well,
but
the truck had clearly identified license plates from a different state, did it not?
It did, Your Honor.
So why do you think simply complying with Minnesota DPS should give, should permit you to claim that you've met the impossibility burden?
Just based on the language of the statute itself, that it's.
This was the Indiana plates, were they?
They were Indiana plates.
Does Indiana have a system similar to DPS in Minnesota?
Indiana, I mean, we're kind of going off the record here, but Indiana does have a similar procedure, but this is all non-public information. There would be a separate licensing scheme, a separate application that would
mean that if you contacted Indiana, you would not be able to get any information based upon the license plate?
No, Your Honor, because this is all public and protected
information.
No, you're
not claiming that, or no, you cannot get it?
No, you cannot get it, and we're not claiming that. And there was no evidence put on the record to
any attempt made by your company to get it to Indiana Licensing Authority?
No, there wasn't, because he's aware of, he's dealt with not Indiana in the past, but he's dealt with other states in the past, and he's familiar that this is private information in every state. This could be very secretive. There could be, you know, an ex-spouse trying to find where this person is located, and so this is secret and confidential.
In any event, you made no attempts to get any of that information from Indiana authorities?
No, he did not, Your Honor. But in this case, that, say, going back to what your point had been, in terms of Quality Companies, there's no dispute that they're not the registered owner of this vehicle. Had he called Quality Companies and they had said, yes, it's our truck, send us the notice, and if he would have sent the notice and then 2 months passed, they don't do anything, he would have went in to try to get a title from Minnesota DPS. They would see that Quality Companies is not the registered owner of the vehicle because they have different access than he does, and they would not have given him a title because it's not proper notice, because close isn't good enough.
But what you seem to be arguing is that as long as we call the Minnesota DPS, and as long as we do that and they say this truck isn't one of ours, then you can possess the truck. So that any out-of-state trucks that get impounded in this state, all the impound owners would have to do is call the DPS and find out. You know, of course, they're not registered in this state, and you basically own a truck.
That's correct, Your Honor, because that's the only way to get information with certainty. I mean, looking.
Well, except if you have a truck that has all the information, and a lot of these trucks do, written all over, these big semi-trucks. I mean, we're talking about, in this case, it's 80,000. Sometimes they're a lot more than that. They all have information right on the trucks. Where in this statute are you excused from calling the information that's on the truck?
Well, there's nowhere that specifically says that you're excused. It just, the statute is saying notice must be given. It's providing that the impound lot operator is able to go to the DPS to get that information. There's nothing that says that DPS is not going to have that information in the case of out-of-state vehicles. It's just it's dealing with some practical realities, and I think it's a very important issue to realize that Quality Companies is not the owner of the truck.
But again, we're, the issue here is whether you met the requisite, I think it's condition for doing publication.
That is correct, Your Honor. And part of it is a matter of public policy in determining where this line drawing should occur, where impound lot operators who are dealing with thousands, tens of thousands of abandoned vehicles, many of which are from out-of-state locations every year, need to do. What
well,
is the
if
standard?
If you're correct, though, that all they have to do is call DPS, then why would they add this clause that we have to give effect to, that it has to be impossible to determine with reasonable certainty the identity and address of the registered owner? Why is that necessary?
Well, obviously, certainty is important, notice is important, but it says right there in the statute, again, that they're entitled to rely on DPS for this information.
But why would you need that? If the statute just said call DPS, and if they're not on the list, it's your truck. Mm-hmm. If the statute said that, why would they need to add that very strong language about impossible to determine with reasonable certainty?
Well, I think that, I mean, that's consistent with the statutory scheme in terms of getting at certainty. And certainly it's strong language, but it's strong language in both directions in terms of the impossibility component of it and the reasonable certainty component of it. And to some degree, it's setting up this very difficult situation for impound lot operators of the DPS is going to know exactly who the owner is, and they're not going to know who the owner is.
It would be fair to say that you have no idea what some contact with Indiana authorities might have given you, what information they might have given you, because you didn't try.
Well,
is that a fair statement?
That's correct. I mean, I have independent knowledge through searching systems, but that's not a matter that was on the record. This was not something that was discussed, an argument that was really advanced as to why notice was deficient, but I would just say that there's no evidence on the record to suggest that he would have been able to get that information through Indiana. And also, I think it's very important to realize that this is an issue where there was actual notice. There was undisputed actual notice of the fact that right around the same time, the quality companies knew exactly where the truck was, knew that it was in need of recovery, knew that a towing company had the truck, and took no action for almost 2 months to reclaim the truck. So part of it is an examination of burdens of where are you putting the burden to do due diligence? Are you putting it on the impound lot operators who can't get reliable information through Carfax reports, through Google searches, through most traditional means, or the vehicle owner who actually owns the vehicle would know where it is, and in this case did know where it is, but sat on it for over 2 months and 3 months since when it was initially abandoned. And I think it's important to realize that from the beginning, it was the initial assumption of the appellant that this truck was going to be reclaimed. He wasn't trying to play games. The way he gets money is by the owner of the property contacting him and paying the fees to reclaim the truck. It's not
which the owner proposed to do here, but your client says, no, too late, I own it.
As of in August, they proposed to do that. There was an initial conversation in July where they were inquiring as to the status of the truck. No request was made for what the amount of the fees were. No attempt was made to pay. And the court made explicit findings.
Wasn't there an offer made then?
Huh?
Wasn't there an offer to pay then?
No, there wasn't an offer to pay then.
Well, actually, the court, though, found that and I think you're talking about the first contact, which was from Ms. Farmer.
Correct.
And that on that date, that started the 45-day period because she found then the publication notice was invalid.
Yeah, the court had specifically found that the clock started that day, not ended that day. And there was no evidence, even to the extent that statements were made, there is no evidence on the record to suggest there was any type of reliance on the statements. And in fact, there's court findings and evidence to suggest that there was no reliance. They didn't rely on his claim at all. They said, send me the notice. They sent it to the legal department to run an analysis on it. The court recognized this fact by making a finding that there was notice as of that date. So I think what we're dealing with is the statutory issue of what it means, where the burdens should lie, but there's just no findings.
Well, but the finding I'm looking at is that the start date for the notice period was July 27, 2017, and then it ran till September 10, 2017. And then there was a contact 25 days after the notice where they asked for, they wanted to pay the storage bill and whatever other expenses were involved and repossess the truck.
Correct, Your Honor.
But they were told it was too late.
As of August 21, I don't believe as of July that they were told that. The court had found explicitly and implicitly that the clock started running as of that date. The finding would make absolutely no sense whatsoever if it was saying that they basically had attempted to exercise as of that date and it ended.
So you're claiming that the court's finding that it commenced on July 27, 2017 was clearly erroneous? Is that what you're arguing?
In terms of the finding, I think it's, we're talking about a legal issue as to what constitutes actual notice. Does being forwarded the impound notice by email constitute actual notice, or does knowing where the truck is constitute actual notice? And there's not a dispute on the record that as of June 25th, that there was actual notice as to where the truck was, that it needed needed to be reclaimed, that it was in the possession of a towing company. And so that's the dispute. Not that there was an erroneous finding as to whether notice was given on July 27th, but whether the June actual notice constituted actual notice for the purpose of this statute.
Did your client testify about why he did not contact the Indiana agency that issues vehicle titles?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because that was never an argument that was raised or any kind of defense that had been raised by the plaintiff. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent, you may approach and begin. Please identify yourself at the beginning.
Morning, Your Honors. Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Kirk Tischer, and this is Eric Hansen with me, and we represent the respondent Quality Companies. The district court correctly found that Appellant Albertson failed to follow both the reclamation provisions and the notice provisions of Minnesota Statutes Chapter 168B, and therefore correctly invalidated the sale of the truck from Appellant Albertson to himself, returned the truck to Quality Companies, and gave Appellant Albertson a judgment for his towing and storage fees.
Could I ask you a question? Because I couldn't tell from the way the order was written. Was there a determination or was there any evidence as to the timing of when the appellant went and obtained the title, whether that was before the telephone conversation with Mr. Zander or was it after?
Your Honor, my recollection is there were several telephone conversations, and I believe it was in the middle of them. I'd have to look at the order itself to be sure, but there certainly was conversations in mid to late August of 2017 between Zender, who is representative of Quality Companies, and Albertson. And around the time those conversations were occurring, I can tell you that's when Albertson went to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety to get the title. I'd like to go back briefly to something Your Honors raised, which was an earlier conversation, and that goes to the standard of review and really what we're looking at here. Now, appellant wants to make this a narrow issue about the interpretation of the notice provisions in 168B06. However, the district court's findings are much more extensive of that, and that issue is not necessarily dispositive. And we'll go back to the July 27th, 2017 conversation. And what the district court found there was, and it said that that Quality Companies called Albertson to try to reclaim the truck. That's why they're calling. It's in the district court's findings of facts, which are entitled to deference. But even if they were even that's not even necessarily dispositive here because they're unchallenged. Nobody is disputing what the district court found regarding the July 27, 2017 conversation. Bridget Farmer, who's a representative of Quality Companies, calls Albertson, and Albertson says, "I own the truck. The only way you can get it back is to repurchase it from me." He denies them their right to reclaim. And that occurs 29 days after the notice by publication. So say you disagree with my client's position on whether published notice was proper. You still have to deal with 29 days after, within the undisputed 45-day reclamation period, the appellant refusing to allow Quality Company its right to reclaim. They make the argument that, well, they didn't actually say we're offering to pay the fees. Well, the district court's findings are very clear. They're calling for the purpose of reclaiming. But Appellant Albertson makes it very clear he's not going to allow them to reclaim. The only way that they can get it back is a complete repurchase. Again, these factual findings are undisputed, and they're alternative grounds for your honors to affirm the district court's decision below. So with that, I would just move to the statutory interpretation piece of this, your honor, and that regards whether notice by publication was proper.
Well, what about the argument of counsel that he did check the Minnesota DPS, and under the statute, that's sufficient?
Well, Your Honor, I think we have to look at the statute and what the statute says, and it's Minnesota Statute 168B06. We're looking at Subdivision 2, and it's the first three sentences that we're looking at. Now, the first sentence says the default is service by mail. That's the summary of the first sentence. Normally, we're serving by mail to the registered owner. The second sentence says that DPS has to make available the records it has to impound lot operators, separate and distinct requirement. And then the third sentence, in a separate sentence, it says, if it's impossible to determine with reasonable certainty the identity and address of the registered owner and all lien holders, then you can publish. There's three separate and distinct sentences. They each have separate purposes, and there's no reason to mishmash them together to get to appellant's interpretation. What they want is a fourth sentence there that says, essentially, if the DPS search is unsuccessful, then it is impossible to determine with reasonable certainty a vehicle's owner. Well, that's not what the statute says, Your Honor. You only get that by adding additional steps of logic to the plain language. And as you noted, that conclusion doesn't necessarily make sense. There's ways to determine a vehicle's owner other than a DPS search. You know, we'll talk later about calling the names on the truck and those sorts of things, but calling the Minnesota DPS is not the only way to figure out who owns a vehicle. People transfer vehicles in the state of Minnesota all the time without running a search. There's other ways. So that construction simply does not make any sense, Your Honor. It's not warranted by the plain language of the statute. The correct interpretation is the district court's interpretation, which was a larger inquiry into the facts and determine whether it was impossible with reasonable certainty to determine the registered owner. That's what the district court did. And
well, what about the argument that, you know, this was an impossible situation because your client didn't own the truck? And how would they ever be able to, with their research, know that they had a right by virtue of a power of attorney?
Well, I would say three things to that, Your Honor. First of all, I'd say that here, notice to the agent is going to be notice to the principal. It's basic agency law. There's case law on it. But the bottom line is, if they would have sent notice to Quality Companies with the power of attorney and allowing Quality Companies to manage everything with this truck, including even selling the truck, Element is not going to be able to come back and stand before Your Honors and say, well, you gave notice to Quality Companies, but they didn't give it to us, so therefore we should get the truck back. That wouldn't work. Your Honors would not accept that argument, I'm fairly confident. Second, I would say that, well, if they contact Quality Companies, they ask for the appropriate documentation, they're going to get it. The documentation's in the addendum. It's number 8, 9, and 10 in the addendum. If you get a hold of Quality Companies, you can have that documentation. All you have to do is reach out to them. But as you noted, that never happened here. And third, I'd hearken back a little bit to the July 26th.
Now, what documentation are you referring to?
Your Honor, I'm referring to on
the title, the Indiana title?
The Indiana title, which Quality Companies possessed, and the power of attorney. So if appellant contacts Quality Companies, says, I have the truck, this is the VIN number, he says, you can reclaim it, which he didn't, by the way. He said, I own it. But if he does say, you can reclaim it, I just need to see proof that you're the owner, here it is, right there. Two documents, it's an email, a fax, takes a couple minutes, there it is. So
is there more, or what, I guess so far as the record reveals, is there more of a contractual relationship between Element and Quality?
You know, it's my understanding, Your Honor, that they lease a number of vehicles. This isn't their only one. Element.
Who leases?
Manages. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I misspoke. Quality Companies manages a number of vehicles that are owned by Element. This is not their only vehicle.
And by manage, then that means that they, I mean, because the trucker here leased the truck from Essential?
The truck.
Element, excuse me.
Yeah, there was an independent contractor, and that Michael Moss, and he leased the truck directly from Quality Companies. And this is going to be found at the beginning of the direct examination of James Zender, and I believe it's in the district court's order as well.
So I take it that Quality leased it from Element?
Quality operates it under a power of attorney for Element.
So really Element is the lessor then, or lessee, excuse me.
Yes, Your Honor. But Element does nothing with this truck. Quality's authority extends to pretty much managing every aspect of the truck. It can even choose to sell it. So Element essentially does nothing once the truck, once it's given this power of attorney to Quality.
Yeah. And the power of attorney indicates that Quality is an agent of Element. I see that, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Attorney effect, custodian, and agent. And going back again to the July 27, 2017 conversation, they're calling Albertson up to Bridget Farmers to reclaim the truck. There's no real dispute that Quality has the authority to take that action, that they can call Albertson up, pay the towing and storage fees, and recover it. This document and the party's relationship allows them to take that step, and I believe that's undisputed.
I take it there were no lien holders in this case?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. Now, Your Honor, I'd briefly like to touch on what Mr. Albertson is saying regarding the burden. Who do you put the burden on? Do you put it on the impound lot owner, or do you put it on the owner? Well, I would ask you, Your Honors, where does the statute place the burden? There's nothing in 168B that requires the actual owner of the vehicle to do anything to find the impounded vehicle. It's all, as far as notice goes, the burden's entirely on the impound lot owner. And that makes sense because the owner of the vehicle may not know where it's impounded, Your Honor. And that goes also to the public policy arguments that are advanced and strewn throughout appellant's brief. Now, appellant is trying to argue that the district court's construction is going to make it difficult for impound lot owners. And there's, in the briefing, there's statements thousands of vehicles are impounded. Very little in the actual record about the larger implications in Minnesota about this.
Can I back you up just a little bit? Let's talk about this notice by publication. When is a notice by publication effective?
Your Honor, I believe it would be effective upon publication.
Upon publication, and that was, what was that date?
I believe it was late June. I would like to say June 26th or around that time.
So July 27 is clearly within the time frame allowed?
Undisputedly, Your Honor.
45 days.
Yes, Your Honor.
And is it your view then that that July 27th discussion was in effect a reclaim of a vehicle?
It was an attempt to do that. Yes, Your Honor, it is my view of that, and I believe it was the district court's factual finding on that as well, Your Honor. And I'll just briefly go to the court's order, and this is on addendum page 3. It's paragraph 17 of the district court's order where the district court finds on July 27, 2017, Quality representative Bridget Farmer called defendant in an effort to reclaim the truck. So word from word quote. And again, I did direct you down to paragraph 19 or section 19 of that same page where it says the on July 27, 2017, only 29 days had passed since notice was published. So there's no dispute, Your Honor, that was an attempt to reclaim. At that time, Appellant Albertson says, I own the truck. The only way you can get it back is to buy it from me back. And there's no opportunity for them to reclaim. And Minnesota Statute 168B09, which is the provision that deals with when the impound lot owner can dispose of the vehicle is very clear. That provision explicitly conditions the impound lot owner's ability to sell the vehicle upon the impound lot owner's compliance with both the reclamation provisions and the notice provisions. Here, he didn't comply with either, Your Honor, and they're both grounds for upholding the district court's order. And that's what the district, and regarding notice, Your Honor, the district court did the correct analysis on notice. The district court looked at the factual findings and determined that, yes, it was possible for the appellant Albertson to determine with reasonable certainty the owner of the vehicle. And again, appellant Albertson is...
I understand that whole discussion. The impossibility only goes to whether you can publish or not.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
There was a publication, and it was effective the end of June, and there's contact by the true owner the end of July. It's clearly within the 45 days. Why do we have all kinds of discussion about whether it should have published or not?
Well, Your Honor, I completely agree with you. I believe that discussion is unnecessary. Your Honors can decide just based on the July 27, 2017 conversation and the district court's factual findings.
The court made a finding that on that date, on the 27th, Albertson said, "I'm too late now, I own it."
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor, that was the district court's finding.
The finding is, I own it within, and that was an activity which occurred within the 45 days of publication.
Yes, Your Honor, undisputedly. The only way you would have to worry about the actual notice provision is if you disagreed and you found that that was not an attempt to reclaim the vehicle that appellant Albertson violated by saying that he owned it. And that was the district court's factual finding. It's unchallenged, Your Honor. That's grounds for upholding and affirming the district court's decision. Your Honors, I thank you for your time.
Can I follow up on that once? I'm looking at point 07, right to reclaim. It says, I'm paraphrasing somewhat, the owner shall have the right to reclaim such vehicle, ... upon payment of all towing and storage charges. I mean, does that mean that the payment has to be tendered in order I should say within 15 or 45 days and so on. Does that mean that the payment has to be tendered?
No, Your Honor. That argument was made and rejected at the district court level. And for the simple reason that if they won't give you an amount to pay, you can't tender payment. If appellant Albertson is saying, I own it, you have to repurchase it from me. There's no way for him for Quality Companies to tender the repayment to reclaim the truck. It effectively cuts off their right that's allowed under statute, and it's grounds for affirming the district court's decision. With that, I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honors. Unless there's anything else, I'll close.
Thank you, Mr. Tischer. Mr. Bialik, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. You are absolutely correct, and I think a critical issue in this is what it actually means to reclaim. And we're not left to guess. Statute specifically says in 168B.07, reclamation is made through the payment of all fees associated with it. The appellant would be the first to tell you that he receives dozens of calls a day from angry people.
So did the appellant advise respondent here as what those fees were in that call and July 27?
He was never asked at that point what the fees were. It was just a conversation with somebody that he didn't even know exactly who they are, what the situation was. He deals with a lot of cars. They made an initial inquiry. He made some statements. The court's findings are clear, and they're undisputed.
Well, the trial court made a finding that Ms. Farmer, apparently on July 27th, asked Quality what they would need to do to recover the truck. And Quality's response was, you need to repurchase it. That's not a response about these are the fees that you need to pay to get it.
That's correct, Your Honor. But again, there was a.
So how did somebody pay the fees or tender the fees if the person who's claiming the truck doesn't tell you what the fees are?
Well, she also never asked what the fees were at that point.
Asked, what does it take to recover the truck? And the answer would be, you have to pay these fees.
From a That is correct. And again, these we're not disputing any of these factual findings at this point. The operative issue here is what the legal significance of this is. The statute is clear as to what the actual act of reclamation looks like. However, it might be a separate issue, this question of were statements made to prevent that. And under those circumstances, there should be court findings to that effect. There should be some evidence that there was reliance on those statements, because if he made statements, but in this case, it's virtually undisputed that there was no reliance whatsoever. He was basically asked, well, prove it. Send me the notice. We're going to send this to our legal department, who conducted an analysis within the time frame, reached an internal determination that we're out of luck, we're not going to get this truck back, and then made the decision to delay for weeks after the period before actually trying to reclaim. And the fact that there's no reliance can even be seen by the fact that there was subsequent communications.
Does the record reflect the new title date?
I believe the title was submitted, I believe, August 21st, but new title was not issued until approximately May of the following year.
The submission, however, was August.
The submission was August.
What date in August?
I believe it was, yes, August 21st, 2017 is when the actual submission was made. But at that point, assuming that the clock had expired, which it would have as of August 5, that he would have had title at that point.
If you rely on publication as the notice.
If you rely on notice by publication, that he would have had title by that point. I think very briefly.
If the operative date is July 27th, as found by the judge, it would have been within that 45-day period that your client obtained the title.
Yes, right? Your Honor, and we're not disputing that. This argument is about when the date was. Was it the June 21st date where notice was published? Was it the June 25 day where actual notice had been of the impoundment had been received by Quality Companies? Or was it July 27th, as is found by the court? And I think it's very important to realize what that finding means by the court, that July 27th is when the clock started running. That is finding that that's when the clock started, not when they were stopped. The court could have said, you know, as of this date, you prevented reclamation, and therefore the clock ended as of July 27th, you lose. That's not what the court did. The court did the exact opposite of that and said that that's when notice began, because that's when the actual notice was emailed over. So I think that's an important point, and it goes to the standard of review here. And one thing that I think is just a last point that I'm going to make that's important is there was a statement made that, well, if you would have called us, of course we would have given you the documentation. But how on earth would they have known that? What if they didn't provide the documentation? What if they did provide documentation, but they just never paid? As many parties do, the appellant would not have given proper notice at that point. They would not be able to get a title to the vehicle. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days. Counsel in the second case may come forward and get ready.